Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsession
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, you guys, it's me, Jackie Cation. That's right. First ranger among rangers of the Dork Forest. You're listening to the Dork Forest. The websites, of course, are thedorkforest.com. Just regular dorkforest.com goes right to it. There's familypetancestry.com that goes to jackiecation.com because it made me laugh. Allthingscomedy.com has a Dork Forest page, and that is because that is my podcast umbrella network, and they have a lot of other podcasts on their website. If you're looking for other pods to listen to, a lot of stand-up comics have their podcasts on there. Al Madrigal and Bill Burr, of course, being the most famous. The credits, let's do it. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio. Mike Rickberg composed and sang the intro song to The Dork Forest. He will sing again his words to the Mexican Hat Dance at the end. And Vilmos fixes JackieCation.com. He will be fixing up the merch page and making everything more expensive. So if it's $25 for a t-shirt with shipping, it's $30. Then that is taken into account that postage has gone up. And yeah, I raised the prices. But it all includes shipping. All the merch, I might as well talk about it. If you go to JackieCation.com on the merch page, the store page, you can get Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirts, the Dork Forest t-shirts. I'm phasing out the brown ones. It's just going to be green. So, but I have some left in stock and I'm going to bring them on the road. They're all union made, all the t-shirts. They are made in the United States of America by union workers who have dental and healthcare, very glamorous. And so hence, they run big, just so you know, because they're made by union members and Americans. We proudly, I guess, or with some shame, are slightly larger than other people. You can also get all of my CDs. My CDs are available digitally on Amazon or iTunes. You can just also stream them on Pandora or Spotify, but you can buy hard copies on my website. So there's the first one, Circus People. Hard copy includes a QuickTime video from my 2003 Comedy Central special. The It's Never Going to Be Bread, which was top 10 comedy albums of the year in 2010 when it came out on Amazon.com. And my new one, which came out last year, was top 5 comedy specials of the year on Vulture.com, and that is called This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux. This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux is available as a CD, as a DVD, or as a downloadable $10 special on ComedyFilmNerds.com, which I also write movie reviews for. You can get just a download of it. The DVD itself has a DVD bonus, and I can sign anything. I can not sign things. There is a new t-shirt, and it is the Spooky Reading Girl t-shirt, a reference from my act. Okay, other than that, the LA Podcast Festival is coming up, you guys. It's where everybody gathers. And if you're coming to it, go to lapodfest.com and buy tickets and come to the Podcast Festival. It's the weekend of September 19th. If you can't make it, you can live stream all of them for a month. All of the different podcasts are being filmed and then live streamed and then saved for a month. So you can buy them all for $25 if you are not going to be able to make the Podcast Festival and you would like my podcast and everybody else's podcast in the whole world. Mark Maron's podcast is going to be there. Aisha Tyler's podcast is going to be there. Thrilling Adventure Hour is doing one. Paul Gilmartin, who was just on the show. And you can live stream all of it. It's $25 for all of them. You can save $5 if you use my code, which is DORK, D-O-R-K, oddly enough. And then it's $20 for everybody. My podcast is going to be 4 p.m. on Saturday, September 19th. My guest will be Greg Proops. And then I'm also doing Paul Gilmartin's podcast that night where we will open a vein and talk about any sort of mental illness that I might have because he has a thing called Mental Pod, Paul Gilmartin. That's at 10 p.m. All these times are Pacific. Now, when I do the live shows now, I'd make them premium episodes. That's on Bandcamp. So if you go to probably bandcamp.com/thedorkforest, I don't know, there's a link. And there's special their special premium episodes. I think they cost $2 because sometimes the live ones cost money to put up with the audio guy and the travel and the hotel and whatever. Other than that, there's, of course, a donation button on both dorkforest.com and jackiecation.com where you can donate to the show. If you are enjoying the show, feel free to donate. This has been a weird year financially. And so if you like the show, you could donate $10 a month. I haven't made that easy because I don't like regular money coming out of anything. So you just have to remember, oh, I like this show. Here's $10. And I'd love $100 from everybody. That's what I would love. If you have $100 a year, I would love that. And if you have more, God knows, I would love that too. But whatever you like, whatever you can afford, and if you can't afford any of it, that's fine. Don't worry about it. I'm glad you like the show. Talk it up. You can also support the show by buying merch, which we talked about, or using the Amazon banner on jackiecation.com, which is when you order from Amazon. And we all do. I'm almost certain we all do. I know it only works with the U.S. version of Amazon, though. But you click through to the U.S. Version of Amazon. You do your order just like normal. And it supports the show a little bit. And it doesn't cost you anything extra on Amazon. I do stand-up comedy, Jackie Cation does. And there is a tour page on JackieCation.com that tells you where I'll be doing it. It's an exciting time. Feel free to come and see me live. But for the love of everybody and their grandmother, let's get into the dorkdom of the day. Thanks for listening, you guys. Let's do this. I'm Jackie Cation, and you're Paul McKillwarton. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jackie. I've been wanting to do your show for a while.
It's been about 3 years of
We've been talking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that I was like...
Every time we bump into each other, we got to do each other's podcasts.
And then nada.
But we're at a swinging party, and there's so much going on.
There's so many going on. You got to find the bowl to put your keys in.
Yeah.
And it's weird. Anyway, so Paul McKillwarton, it's at MentalPod on Twitter and MentalPod.com. And the name, it's mental health.
Mental illness happy hour.
Yeah. I want it to be mental health happy hour.
Somebody started a podcast called that.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. And so I emailed them and I said, I'm not sure you're aware that I have a podcast called the Mental Illness Happy Hour, but I think it would be great if you could consider changing your name because a lot of people accidentally call my podcast that.
The Mental Health Happy Hour.
Yeah. And I said, I think you're going to get a lot of people going to your site actually looking for mine, and that's not really cool with me. And yeah. I said, and I would be willing to promote your show if you change the name to it, you know,
well, you
as a way. Nope. Yep. Nope.
No response or
no
anything?
No response. No, I think they were just like, we've already put some work into it, so we're going to stick with this name. Best of luck to you.
All right. You know, I just did Joseph Scrimshaw. I don't know if you know a young comedian named Joseph Scrimshaw.
I don't.
Very funny young man. Turns out he is a nerd. He's been on the Dork Forest.
I'm going to try to remember his name. I'm going to carve it in my bone.
You should carve it into some bone, yeah. Some whale bone. And but he has a podcast called Obsessed. Huh. And I just did it. And he said, I would like you to know that I did not know about the Dork Forest when I started Obsessed. But Obsessed is the Dork Forest. And I said, whatever, man. It's a podcast.
There's so much overlap in podcasts.
Yeah.
I essentially.
Even with dorkdoms.
There's like three things that you can talk about. How lonely you are, how sad you are, and how much you're waiting for the loneliness and sadness to return if you happen to not be lonely and sad at that moment.
You know, the reason I wanted to have you on, Paul McKillwarton, mm-hmm. was because you are a carpenter. Like our
woodworker.
Lord.
Woodworker, there's a big difference.
Is there?
Yeah, carpenter is more the structure of houses and buildings and stuff like that.
Okay.
Carpentry is a lot of 2x4s and framing.
Okay.
Woodworking is working with a variety of different woods and
on purpose.
Yes, like, that's the joy of it.
That's the treat.
Is that's the like, color palette.
Okay, so it's a different kind of wood.
Yes, and you're designing all your own. I mean, you can use stuff. You can use plans, but I've never been a. I never learned to read music. I never do plans. I just like kind of winging it. And
is it Whitland? Is there whittling going on?
There is no whittling.
There is no
and
whittling.
I don't do lathes.
Okay. What is a lathe?
A lathe is what you make bowls on spindle legs. It's a thing that spins the chunk of wood and you take a...
But horizontally.
Horizontally.
Horizontal
exactly.
spinning Like knifey, and like
shave,
sharpie thing?
Yes, okay. And you shave stuff off it. But I've never liked spindled legs,
okay.
And I don't really care about bowls. So right. What I like doing is, in fact, I'll give you a, you edit, right?
Yeah, sure, if you want.
Okay, because I'm going to show you a couple of pictures of... It's just going to take me a second to call up my photos to kind of show you the kind of stuff I design and build.
Well, I'll tell you this. As my dad once said to me, you know, I regret not planting a lot of black walnut because, you know, that's a long-term investment.
He is not wrong. a really mature black walnut tree could bring tens of thousands of dollars.
Right, right.
And it's a fantastic wood. Walnut is one of the... and California black walnut is one of the most awesome woods.
And you can you tell the difference between trees when you're walking around in them? Or is it just when in their wood?
In their wood state, yeah.
In their wood state,
I'm
okay.
Very bad at identifying trees. Here are some of the things that I started building. I've always loved Japanese lamps, how they glow. And I love mid-century modern furniture, so I designed... mid-century stuff that has Japanese lamps built into them.
Japanese lamps being like a lantern-y kind of look
yes.
to it. Is it rice paper that is on it?
I do use rice paper. This one happens to be Egyptian papyrus.
Okay.
And they slide out. They're screens, so I can put in different. And then that's a DVD.
Different colors.
That's a DVD cabinet that lights up.
Oh, my God. And then you made this.
I made
this
it.
That is a beautiful that, piece. What is the kind of wood that is made out of?
That is made out of walnut.
As well?
Yes.
California walnut that we were discussing?
Yeah, California black walnut has some purple to it, whereas regular black walnut does not.
What is the two-story DVD?
I've always loved the look of amplifiers that
yeah.
glow, the head of an amplifier when it glows, and I thought, well, why not just... do kind of that on top of the DVD cabinet, just
right.
a lamp that makes it look like an amplifier.
Oh, that's awesome. And then yeah. did you make this?
All of that stuff I made.
Okay,
yeah.
This is all of your stuff.
That is one of the hardest woods known to man. The hardest
table.
Wood known to man
what
is
yeah.
I'm not sure exactly how it's pronounced because I've only read it. Lignum vitae.
Lignum vitae.
And it was actually used in the bearings of... old ships because it almost can't wear down. It's got some natural oil to it, and it is incredibly, incredibly hard. But this is one of the densest, hardest woods that you find in the States, and it is called Osage Orange. Ironically, not orange in the least.
Right, right. Brown.
Mostly used for hedges. When you first mill it, it's kind of bright yellow.
Oh, okay.
A lot of woods have awesome colors, and then after they age a bit, they change. There's a wood, one of my favorite woods to work with. It's an African wood called Padauk, P-A-D-A-U-K.
Okay.
And when you mill it, it is the color of Cheetos. And then it turns ruby red after a while.
And then it turns red.
But I'm not exaggerating. The bright orange.
Like Cheetos.
Cheetos. Straight up Cheetos.
Full on Cheetos.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, crazy. Well, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
But this, so if you don't use a lathe, what do you use, a saw? What are
yes.
we using?
There's a bunch of different saws that I use. The one you use the most is a table saw. Building stuff out of wood is all about getting a perfect 90-degree angle because
okay.
then that gives you a good joint. If you have a 91-degree angle, that's going to throw everything else off. Then you're going to have gaps in your joints, and then stuff is going to be weak. So you need a good quality table saw. It needs to be set up and tuned correctly so that it's straight on 90 degrees. Because you're very often pieces of wood are too wide to mill in one piece.
Okay.
So you have to divide them up and then glue them back together.
Oh.
And if it's not 90 degrees, you're going to have gaps. And then it's going to be visible when you look at it.
The setting up of a regular saw,
uh-huh.
is it, do you hire someone to make sure it's level and bolt
no,
it
you
to
can
the
do
ground?
No, you can do it to your, you can do it yourself. There's a lot of stuff you can do yourself, which isn't that difficult. Some of it's incredibly difficult.
Okay. And are they expensive?
Yes, a good one. A good table saw will probably run you $2,000.
Okay. How long do they last? Do they last forever?
Decades.
Okay.
Decades if you treat it right.
And then you just replace the blades or something,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And there's different size blades,
yes,
I assume.
And then a bandsaw is the other thing, and that is a – how do I describe it? It's almost like it's a loop of a saw that spins around and runs vertically through the table.
Oh.
And so you use that if you're going to – a table saw, you can't curves on a
– Is there a table and then there's a blade sticking out of the middle of it?
Yes.
Kind of situation?
Well, that's a table saw as well, but a bandsaw, it goes all the way up into a higher portion of it.
Oh.
And it spins around on a loop, whereas a table saw is like a an album,
yeah,
shaped like an album that just spins around halfway up in the thing. But you can cut curves on a bandsaw. So that's what you can't do on a table saw.
Okay, because it's not made for that.
Right, and it would pinch and it would throw it back at you, and it could kill you. I actually got kickback one time on my table saw, and it shot a piece of wood. Thank God I wasn't standing in front of it. Shot it past me and through the paneling on the wall 15 feet behind me. And I left it there just as a reminder.
Holy, what kind of protect? I mean, you're wearing eye protection,
you don't,
right?
You don't stand in front of, you stand off to the side when you're.
You always stand, you just don't stand anywhere that.
And you also have a kick guard usually, but sometimes you need to make cuts that are so small that the kick guard would get in the way.
Okay.
And that's what I was doing.
That's what happened in that case.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it threw up a piece of like a splinter, like a full on like icicle.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a.
That could have impaled you.
It could have. And the top on this table is what you call a free edge. That is the edge of the actual tree itself. And that's my favorite stuff to build because you don't see that stuff mass produced. I like stuff when you look at it. You go, oh, that could not possibly have been made in mass production.
Right, because that occurred in nature.
That occurred.
And then you worked around it.
Right.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
my favorite stuff to
do. Super fun.
And then here's something that you would totally dork out on.
Yeah.
There was an installation that Janet Varney and a friend of hers did.
Janet Varney, JV podcast. I've been on it. She's been on mine, but I got to get her back.
The theme of it was Santa Fe astronaut. And so you had to build something to that theme. And so I took a piece of mesquite wood, free edge, and made a bench and embedded into the top of it the guts of a Mac.
Oh, and so you put a computer, just the innards.
Like the innards of the computer inlaid. You know, likely you would have inlay on something. I thought, let's do the guts of a computer and then covered it with epoxy.
Oh, that's awesome. An epoxy is like shellacking, isn't it?
It's kind of
but nicer.
Yeah. it's thick and it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that. That's pretty cool.
But I could talk about wood
all day. What brought you to wood? Did your dad teach you?
No. My dad sat on the couch and smoked.
I'm going to turn down my computer. Tell the story of who introduced you to wood, Martin?
I took a wood shop in high school, and I just remember the first day walking in there and it loving the smell of sawdust. It felt like I wasn't at school. It felt, it just felt, there's something about it felt like home. And
it felt like you weren't at school.
Yeah, it felt like recess. And I liked my shop teacher. He was a guy named Mr. Stewart, who was, you know, he had a kind of a wry sense of humor, but he was super helpful. And he helped me build my first big project. And he was honest with me. He said, this is going to be tough, but, you know, if you really want to do it, let's give it a shot.
And that's the greatest teacher in the world.
Yeah, it was one. And I sent him a cutting board a couple of years ago.
Oh wow!
And said thank you for inspiring me.
Oh, that's amazing. Now, shop, because did you ever see Stand By Me?
Oh yeah.
And do you remember how like different kids are put like you're either I wasn't allowed to take shop. I took home ec. My brothers were in. They had to take shop because they were not on the college track. And then one of my younger brothers, and so he said, "I'm not taking shop. I'm taking algebra." And the guidance counselor was like, No, you're an idiot family. You're an idiot family that needs to take shop and home ec and not, and all girls had to take home ec. It was a requirement. But with guys, it was either you were either on
machine
the college
shop,
track,
small engines, or wood shop.
That was it. Is that what happened in your case? Were you?
I don't think I was.
Or was it elective?
Told. It was elective.
Oh, that's
it was
awesome.
Elective. I just thought this will be fun. This will. And I went to a great high school. The high school we shared with the other town. The other town was really rich.
Oh, okay.
And so we had racquetball courts.
Where did you grow
ice
up?
Ice rink. South suburbs of Chicago, Homewood, Flossmoor. I was from Homewood, which was a lot more middle class, and Flossmoor was very upper middle class. And so we got to ride the coattails of Flossmoor's money.
Of Flossmoor's cash, cash cow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. It just went from there, right?
I didn't woodwork again after I graduated high school. I didn't woodwork again until we bought a house in 96.
Okay.
And actually, not until I got sober and just had all this extra time and energy. And it started with something. It started with something really small. I was going to work on our bathroom, and I'm not handy in the least.
Weird.
And or wasn't.
Right.
And so I started working on the bathroom, and so I needed a couple tools, so I went to Home Depot.
Yep.
And that's when
what was the first thing you made?
The first thing I made was a workbench, because I didn't have I didn't have anything to work on. And that's the irony, is what do you work on your workbench on?
Yeah.
You work on those horses?
Oh yeah, the wooden horses that you stack things on.
Yes.
So you worked on that to create a workbench.
To create a workbench.
What makes a workbench? You know how like a
heavy.
It has to be heavy.
Because there's a lot of stuff you do on it where if it's not heavy enough, the workbench will move. And hard is good too, but I used poplar, which isn't that hard of a wood because it was I didn't know how much I was going to screw it up.
Okay.
And I didn't want to use an expensive wood like walnut in case I screwed it up. So I used poplar, but it's super dented now, but it's
fine.
Oh yeah, it doesn't move. It's great.
So it just has to be heavy enough that you can hammer on it and saw on it
and put stuff in the vise.
And there's a vise that goes on the workbench.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are you working? What goes in a vise? I'm going to ask
anything you need.
Questions.
Anything you need held.
Okay.
Anything that you would otherwise try to hold
with a third hand.
Yeah.
But what would that be? I mean, what do you
something you're shaping, something you're making a small handmade cut on, a lot of things you're sanding.
Okay.
That
actually makes sense to me, because a vise, the only vise that we have in our house is for Hot Wheel tracks. It's that thing where
awesome.
You can just attach it to something high so that Andy can send the Hot Wheel track down. But
I remember Hot Wheels. I love
them. Well, our neighbor guy has a workbench. So you made the workbench so that then you could make more stuff.
Yes.
And then it was all functional or for like tables and
almost all of it functional. You know, my wife would say we could really use drawers under the butcher block table, and I'd be like, done. And
done.
I loved it because I love the problem solving part of creating things. I'll show you something that
like
I make.
Like a design? Like,
yes.
Like an architecture kind of thing? Or
kind of, but I wouldn't normally draw stuff. I might do a really rough sketch, but I would rarely do dimensions and down to the details like a lot of people do.
Do you measure twice and cut once?
I wish I could say yes, but I don't know if I've ever measured twice. And that's where a lot of the improvisation of stuff comes in.
Jerry-rigging it back together, is that the deal?
Yes.
Okay.
Or going, I guess it's going to be smaller than I thought it was.
Right, because you had to cut it again?
Here's an example of a project that I really had a lot of fun doing, and the design phase of it probably took a month. I have a friend who collected fedoras,
okay,
and he wanted a hat rack, and I thought, I don't want to do the boring hat rack where the hat just lays flat on a peg against it. The thing that I think looks so great about a fedora is when it's at an angle on someone's head.
Okay.
And you see the real shape of it. So I thought, I want to design something so the hats all look like they're floating in space at that cool angle.
Okay.
So I walked around Home Depot for weeks trying to come up with an idea. And so here's what it looks like.
I want to have the hat dork on the Dork Forest.
Here's what it looks like before you put hats on them. These have copper wires running through them, and so they bend so that you can hang a hat on them. See how they bend now?
Yeah.
And then when you put the hats on them, they look like they're floating in space.
Oh, right, right. They stick out from the... It's. I pictured something else. I pictured more of a slant, sort of like a slidey thing.
Yeah, and then it kind of hides the thing that's holding them.
Right, so it looks like it's just... And then you could pick the hat of your choice.
Yes.
He has at least 7 hats.
Yeah.
Nice work on his fedora collection.
And that, you know, that was... Part of the fun of it was inventing a way to make it happen. And that
you take notes? I mean, you have to... There has to be some sort of process of what to do kind of thing.
Most of it is in my head. You know, I do have to write numbers down because I need to remember what size the things are that I'm cutting.
Right.
But so much of it is just kind of winging it.
Okay.
But it also involves a lot of mistakes when you wing it. But
yeah. But so that's part of the process.
That's part of the process.
You don't beat yourself up at all? You're just like that?
Oh, I beat myself up all the time when I'm... Sometimes I would... You know, I'd have a cup of coffee. I'd be all excited to get out in the shop. And then I would think about what piece of wood I was going to use. And I would go, oh, my God, that's an expensive piece of wood. If I make a mistake on that, I've wasted $800. And then I would work myself up into just anxiety and perfectionism. And I work myself up into a nap. And I would have to go sleep. And I wouldn't do anything that day.
Right.
Many days of that.
Many days of you just freaking out about the project that you haven't started.
Yes.
Okay. And then what makes you start it?
An idea.
Okay.
A need for something.
You're like, this has to be made. Or, I told him I would do it.
Or a piece of wood that just kind of inspires me, where I just am like, I have to make something out of this because I just want to look at this in my house, this beautiful wood grain.
Where do you buy wood? Do you buy it at Home Depot?
Internet.
Oh, the internet's the way to go?
Most of it in the internet. You can buy a ton of stuff here locally, but you're paying for an expensive address.
Okay.
Whereas,
oh, so it's a lot cheaper if you just...
Way cheaper. There are great places.
But is shipping crazy?
Not when you buy
heavy?
In bulk. I would buy in bulk. So I would buy a couple $1,000s worth of wood, and then it...
How much wood is I mean, how heavy is...
It could be just two...
Like a tree? What are we looking at?
Oh, God, no. No. Wood is very expensive. Good quality wood is very expensive. Like a slab that would make a coffee table could be $1,200.
Okay. Now, let's look at my coffee. May I?
Sure.
See this coffee table?
I do.
I got this approximately 15 years ago at the Goodwill, and it was $25. And it has lasted. It's a nice size.
It is.
It's a good height. What do you think it's made out of, and what is happening?
I don't know if the top of that, the thing that's inset in here, that's a piece of plywood. It might even be...
just all particle board?
Yeah, might even be a composite of stuff that's not actually even wood and is just made to look like wood. I think it is. But the edges...
Use the mic.
The edges of it look like they're made of wood. And that's a pretty common thing to do. The great thing about using plywood is it doesn't warp. So it's...
Plywood doesn't warp?
No. It has different layers, and the layers go at different angles to stabilize the layer above and below it.
What the hell is plywood?
Plywood is just...
Shavings? That are pressed?
No.
Pressed.
It's sheets of wood that are cut very thin.
Okay.
Very, very thin, like 1/32nd of an inch. And that's what makes plywood so stable and so common to use in stuff. But the problem with plywood is because that top layer is 1/32nd of an inch.
Yeah.
If you ding it or you gouge it, you can't sand that out because you're going to sand down into the layer below it.
Oh, it's done.
It's done.
Yeah, that's all that was there.
Yes.
Okay.
Whereas real wood, you can, you know, the tables that I make are
How thick?
An inch and a half of solid wood. So you can refinish that for 100 years.
Okay. So, because I have often thought about refinishing this.
Yeah, it would be, you'd have to be really delicate with that. And again, that middle part, I'm not sure that that is even wood, but it could be refinished. I just don't know if it could be sanded.
Right. What is
very lightly sanded?
I would break it if I refinished, because I don't know what I'm doing.
Refinishing is taking the top layer of the varnish off. Yeah, you can use it with some type of chemical.
Okay.
And then you could maybe lightly sand it and then put a new layer of
just to
varnish.
Clean it up.
Yeah, clean it up.
Okay, so that's what I thought it was. I've never done that. I did want to. I read a great book as a child about whittling, and I was like, I want to make a horse out of a piece of wood, and that's all done with a knife. I'm pretty sure.
That's nice. Very low investment.
Yeah, the investment. You gotta need a softer wood for that. Yeah. It's not a hardwood whittling situation.
Yeah. But the part that sucks is when you're done, you're stuck with a shitty horse.
Right, because nobody can really do it.
Yeah.
I mean, the person that can do it, there's one out of a gajillion people who can make a good-looking horse out of a block of wood. The Michelangelo of whittling. But so I love the fact that – so you said you haven't done it in a while.
I haven't.
Well, you weed it off, right?
Yeah, when my depression is even just kind of low-grade, my passion for a lot of things – goes out the window. So I haven't woodworked consistently probably in 2 years.
Okay. Okay. So what happens now?
But I also tend to blow through obsessions.
Yeah.
I mean, I could list.
Right. Well, you did list, which is.
And that's a partial list of the things. The things that aren't on there was collecting sports cards, football and basketball cards.
Okay.
Collecting wine, collecting. Taking dog pictures. I took so many dog pictures in 1 year. The camera that I had, you know how it'll assign one a number,
yeah.
1, 2. I rolled it over. I took over 10,000 pictures and
of other people's dogs, your own
of dogs
dog.
At a dog park.
Dogs at a dog park. You're like, I want to take pictures of dogs.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have a website for that. If you want to,
look at it.
It's Paul-Gilmartin. Squarespace.com.
That's okay. It's a Squarespace one.
Yeah. It also has some music tidbits that I made that I put on
there. Is there a place where people can see the wood?
Yes. I believe handshapedfurniture.com. I think is the, double check it.
And then I can put it in the notes if I do notes, which I sometimes do and sometimes don't.
Yeah.
I used to do a better job with the notes, but it got away from me. But what I love about this list is that it's like, it's essentially all, it's dorkdoms used to stem the tide of your depression.
That's exactly it.
The mental illness happy hour is entirely about depression and dealing with it and sort of hearing people's stories, right?
Anxiety, just simple negative
tales.
Thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Like
it can be super dark and it also can be kind of light and not so serious, but it tends to be a little darker and a little more heavy.
Yeah. I mean, did you have Bamford on? And you tend to have comics on, right? Didn't you have Aisha Tyler on?
Much less so now than I did when I started, because now I have a lot of listeners on because they will send me their stories and it greatly increases the breadth of topics I can choose from. So the first person to email me and say, I'm a listener, I think you should consider having me as a guest, was a woman named Nadire Fanoyan, who
just the greatest name in the world.
She was an Iranian revolutionary. She was a Marxist.
Wow.
And had to flee underground pregnant from the Ayatollah.
Back in 79.
This was more in the mid-80s where they had already kind of taken power and
weeding out. The Shah went down in 79.
Yes.
Ayatollah came in after that.
Came in after that, and they were beginning to get rid of all the groups that threatened them.
Right.
And she was a part of that, and her husband was caught, and
oof.
And she was not, and so she was I won't ruin any more of the story.
Spoiler alert.
It was an almost 2-hour episode, and we didn't even get into the fact that she is a nurse in a psychiatric ward. That's how much of her story. So that let me know, wow, there's a lot of stories. If I only interviewed comics, I would never have stories like that.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, opening up to, there's plenty of comics. Paul F. Tompkins needs to be on a lot of podcasts. He's been on this one twice.
He was on mine and he was great.
And he was great. And it is great. But we tend to, it
gets a little incestuous.
Yeah. Yeah. There's too much. So to break out a little bit, that's what I like about kind of the younger comics and those guys. Cause I'm like, well, at least it isn't the same nine comics. Yeah. It's a different nine comics coming on talking about their weirdo dorkdom. And a 32-year-old dorkdom is a kid that was raised, is a guy or a woman who was raised watching VHS tapes over and over and over again. So those dorkdoms are super pure. Super, yeah. Like
pre-digital.
Pre-digital but post, like when I was a kid, my dorkdom was to take the longest walk in the world. Like from when I was four, I would just be gone from my house for hours until I was 18. And then I went to college and I was allowed to live alone. And, but when you're a little kid and you have a VCR, you can check out by sitting in front of that VCR forever. And it's great. And you're like, I have memorized Aladdin. And you're like, have you? And that is awesome.
Oh, yeah. I can quote almost any line from The Jerk or Silver Streak, which were the two first movies things that we had on VHS.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Very nice. So, but I like the idea of woodworking as sort of a tool because it's using your hands and it's
It's very meditative.
It's meditative.
The first time I realized how really meditative it was, I would pick music that I wanted to listen to on my iPod, and I had never been into John Coltrane. Mm-hmm. And when I started woodworking and having his music play, I found that I could listen to it over and over again, and I realized it's because I'm in kind of a meditative state when I'm listening to his music.
Yeah.
His isn't a kind of music that I like actively listening to,
right?
But listening to as a part
background
of something else,
yeah,
it was, I suddenly got him.
Right. Well, and a couple of these are like that, like guitar playing. That is a learned solo activity where it becomes, you get better at it.
You can only masturbate so much at 15.
Right. Which is also a solo meditative kind of thing.
You get to know your instrument.
Right. And you get better at it. Yeah. And you're like, and done. And so, but the guitar feels like the woodworking. I mean,
it's very much so.
Did you get a guitar as
yes. At 14, I took some music lessons. I never really clicked with the music lessons. But I really didn't start to get decent as a player until I was in my 20s and I was a stand-up. You know what the biggest step was? Was being in standard tuning. Because you can be in tune, but just to yourself. But if you're in standard tuning, then you're in tune to the song that's on the radio or on the album, so then you can learn what it is that they're doing. But if you're not in tune, standard tuning, you're playing it in a different place on the neck than the person that wrote it.
Is that a specific guitar thing, standard tuning? Because
all instruments.
See, I was not taught that. Granted, my musical education was haphazard. Yeah. I enjoyed the social activities of being in the marching band. But I played the clarinet and I played the trumpet, and to tune the damn thing, they're wind instruments. It's a lot more, well, they made it in tune. Make sure that you're not screwing around. So so who taught you how to tune a guitar?
Oh, it's very simple. I don't even remember who.
Okay.
It's very, very
from
simple.
A book or something.
Yeah, you get you can either use a pitch pipe or you can use a tuner that you plug into.
Okay.
And then once I was able to do that, then I could put on music that I liked and learn how to play it. And once you learn what other people are doing on the neck, you begin to see patterns. And so then it opens up this whole world to you, as opposed to when you were just in tune with yourself and playing what you,
Yeah, and the lessons are all, you know, like how to read music and how to can you read music?
No.
No,
I tried.
So it was by ear and
by ear.
Yeah.
Which in many ways I think is much better because part of your brain isn't dedicated to something intellectual while you're playing. All of it is dedicated
to feel. Does it feel more organic?
It feels way more organic.
Yeah.
And I think it allows you to have more feel.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. But
yeah.
Most of my favorite guitarists, I should say a lot of my favorite guitarists, didn't even read music. Stevie Ray Vaughan
didn't read music. Yeah, there's. I had a cellist on who went, and she's amazing, but it's just it whatever your journey is the way it goes, and
that's what worked for me.
And what worked, yeah, and whatever works is fantastic. So what about hockey? Now hockey's a team sport.
Yes,
that is something that you said. Then this is a dorkdom. I had Eddie Pepitone on. He talked about he's a watcher. He likes to watch hockey. He doesn't play. Hmm. Now you like to play?
I started playing when I was 8, and I've.
Makes sense.
Ironically, really started playing more when I moved to California, and I played 3 times a week for 20 years since I've been out here.
And you still playing?
Still play, yeah.
Do you have black skates?
I do. Most skates are black.
Yeah.
There was a year when Nike had white skates, and
It was they're girl skates, man. I remember skating as a kid, and the boys would always wear black skates, and the girls would wear white skates. And I could never skate backwards. It was a very flirtatious move that on the lagoon, on the pond, where we would go skating. It was something that.
Isn't skating on a pond the best?
It was pretty amazing. I would always I was afraid. I'm not hugely athletic. So you started it at 8, a team sport.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I suppose it's a team sport when you're out playing on a pond and you break up into teams.
Right.
But it wasn't organized. I didn't really start playing organized hockey until I was probably 12, 13.
Okay. So you learned the basics just on the ice.
Yeah.
Just screwing around. Okay. And so you can skate backwards. And you can move a puck around I mean it's a multitasking.
You never stop learning. You never stop I didn't learn how to take a proper slap shot until I was 35 years old. And a friend of mine said, "You know that you're supposed to hit behind the puck." I had no idea.
Oh, weird.
Because I'd never been formally trained. I'd never learned the true fundamentals. I knew the fundamentals of skating because you learn it because you have to learn it.
Right.
But
the stick work has got to be, and different coaches at that level are.
Our coach didn't even play hockey.
Right.
Our high school hockey coach.
Right. So he just ran drills and
yes.
not just running drills.
I made sure that his son played more than everybody else.
Oh, well, you know, he had invested in it.
Yeah.
Did you win much? Is that something you like?
I have a problem with losing that I intellectually know is childish.
Yeah.
But, the only time I really saw my dad show true joy towards me was when I would win.
Okay.
And I think that planted a seed for me that my worthiness is attached to whether or not I win.
Whether who wins.
And I catch myself doing it,
yeah.
But it's still an emotional reaction, the fear of losing.
But as long as you catch it, I mean, it's something you can work on,
yes,
I guess.
But it's only when there's referees. It's only when it's officially being kept score. I play on Sunday nights just a pickup where there's no referees and we just divvy ourselves up.
Yeah.
And I don't get nervous at all about
Right, and you don't have a vested interest in how that goes. You just want to play.
Yeah. But before an organized game with referees, I get butterflies. I still get butterflies.
Interesting. Yeah. So are you pretty good? Do you think you're
I do think yeah. I'm a good player. You know, I'm getting older, so my muscles aren't as strong, and I screw up more than I used to. But
a good team player, like a good.
Yes, I think so. You know, I'm considered in one of the leagues I play in. Guys tell me I'm, you know, one of the best defensemen in the league.
Oh, good.
So, I take pride in that, and I think I'm a good team player.
Yeah,
I get as much pleasure out of passing. To someone who scores as I do scoring, maybe even more so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's good being being in those sort of cooperative environments. I like,
and it's a really great way to male bond. I love, because it's a way to male bond in a way that isn't gross.
Right. Right. You're just,
because there's a lot of male bonding that is gross to me.
Is it just locker room stuff, or like,
yeah,
what's
it, you know, it's having each other's back when you're out on the ice. If somebody picks a fight with one of your guys,
you can bond together.
Yeah, you can take it personally. You can maybe get in there and separate him, grab the guy, pull him off your friend, or maybe you wind up fighting that guy.
Right.
I don't fight much anymore, and the fights aren't long. They're maybe 5 seconds before
they're just pushing fights mostly.
Oh, no, there can be punching. I've punched guys with my bare fist before.
I always wonder to what end.
Yeah.
And because it's not like you're going to knock them out.
But the feeling when everybody on your team touches the puck and then somebody scores, is a beautiful, beautiful feeling.
It fulfills something very real.
It touches something really deep, and I think it's a genetic thing.
Yeah,
I really think it's there's something in us that maybe it goes back to the group going out and hunting.
Right, maybe. Yeah, it's and it's certainly better than sitting around talking about who you fucked.
Yes,
which is a less positive bonding moment,
and just kind of leaves me grossed out. Even though I did it when I was younger.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
It was. I have a friend who tells me stories, and I'm like, dude, I don't want to like stories about like of guy bonding, things like that. And he thinks it's kind of like, he's like, well, you're kind of a guy's, you know, like one of the guys. And I'm like, I'm never going to be one of the guys.
One of those guys.
And I would never be one of those. If I were a man, that wouldn't be, I don't think that would be the kind of man I would be. None of my brothers are those kind of men.
And my teammates they're not that way. Most of them are in their 30s, maybe 40s.
Right.
And so they got kids and, you know.
Right, they're dads.
Yeah, we don't talk about
they're not gross.
women like
people.
That. Yeah, we make fun of each other. We compliment each other. It's really great.
It's adult men being. It's one of my favorite things about my husband is that he is an adult man with the heart and soul of a guy who wants to play a game.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah.
So it's just, he's just a good person.
I get as excited lacing my skates up today as I did at 8 years old. I'm still excited to get out there.
You played nonstop since you moved here, pretty much.
Since I moved here. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a lot of hockey.
It's a lot of hockey.
And so
you can't help but get better.
Right. And you meet a lot of different, I would imagine, a lot of different people.
It's awesome.
Because it's not all industry people or it's not all comics.
No, it's majority of it is not industry people. And it's so diverse. Sunday night, I play with probably a third, maybe
how many people are on a team?
It can be anywhere from,
because those are pickup games.
Yeah, yeah. 8 to 12 guys show up on a given night.
Is it a max of 12?
No, there's no max. So sometimes you'll have three lines of guys, which blows. The ideal is two lines or little less than two lines.
Okay, so eight is kind of nice.
Eight is great.
Okay, just because then everybody gets to play.
Yeah.
Got it.
There's five skaters and a goalie out there at any given time, although the pickup I play at on Sunday night is a really small rink, so it's 4-on-4 instead of 5-on-5. But, you know, the group I play with on Sunday nights, bunch of the guys are Orthodox Jewish.
Okay.
A group of guys I play against on Wednesday night are Russian.
Okay.
There's teams we play against that are, most of the guys are Armenian.
Right.
And it's just fun.
Yeah.
Just fun.
That's, and it's nice to, I mean, you know, they say that, you know, exercise is very good for depression. They say
it is.
That's what that it's, I know that, when, Andy started, my husband started jogging about 3 years ago when his father passed away. And now he can jog almost 4 miles.
That is a long way.
That's a long way.
I used to jog.
He's leading by example, by the way. I am not jogging. I'm not doing, I came back from the physical therapist because I screwed up my knee. And I said, she told me that I should walk for 30 minutes. And there was this pause and Andy goes, you know, she meant every day. And I was like, what?
I just said to my wife this morning, if plunging the toilet counts as exercise. I work out every day.
Every day you're working on so you don't know plumbing? You don't know, you can't fix plumbing?
I don't know if it's a plumbing problem or if it's a Paul problem.
It might be a Paul problem. Yeah. We don't know. So now there's other stuff that, I mean, we've gone through hockey and we've gone through woodworking, but there's, I'm and the guitar, but I'm kind of interested in the video game playing.
Sweet, sweet Civilization.
And you're back, you said.
I'm back.
Now, Civilization, that's not Spore, right? Civilization is sort of Farmville, but to the exponential.
The end.
Yeah.
It's, if you're a control freak, it should come in a crack pipe. It is a turn-based strategy game. You start with a settler, you build a town, then you build more towns, they turn into cities, and then some, Babylonia.
Right. You can make Babylonia?
You can pick, there are civilizations that you pick to start with. And
okay.
Currently I've been playing Japan because each civilization has something that's unique about them that's a plus.
Okay.
Maybe they're industrious. Maybe their temples are easier to build, which
right.
brings more culture, which makes the people happier, which...
Oh, like SimCity where your job is to make people happy?
Well, but there's a balance between keeping your people happy and having a strong military, because the military doesn't make them happy, but it keeps them safe.
Okay.
And if you don't have a resource that you need to grow and to stay competitive, then you need to invade another civilization. Or if you can get them to trade with you, that's
yeah.
great.
Yeah. So this is a multiplayer online?
I play against a computer.
Okay.
You can play online, but I just like playing against a computer.
Okay, so you start in, is it discs?
Now it's just a
download. Okay.
And it's an app you can use on your iPad, which is limited.
Right.
It's a light version of it.
Okay.
But I play for the Mac. And
so you play on your Mac at home, desktop.
Yeah. And headphones.
With headphones.
Oh yeah.
What's happening audio? What's the audio?
A lot of it is just background music. When you fight somebody, there's the fights of
sound
war.
Yeah.
When you create something, you create, maybe a palace or something. There's this, ceremonial sound of something
right.
being created.
Oh, that's cool.
When somebody in a faraway land has built something that you were trying to build first, there's this doomy sound that you've screwed up.
Yeah,
you've been beaten to the punch.
So so do you start out in cave days?
You do, and you are constantly researching something. You're constantly using your scientific prowess to work on one advancement at a time. So once
this sounds incredibly addictive.
Jackie, you will love it.
I'm playing Simpsons Tapped Out, which is essentially a dollhouse. It's just a SimCity. And I spend probably an hour and a half every day just checking in, making sure everybody's got a task.
This doesn't go on its own. You have to do every.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You have to choose everything for it to do. There's a few things you can automate. You can automate your workers to just build improvements on
right.
their own, build roads.
But at
like
12-hour increments or different hour increments? Kind of, is it like that where you
the
set
game
people
stops
a task?
When you exit the game, the game stops.
Okay.
Nothing is happening unless you're in front of the screen.
Oh. Well, that's kind of interesting because SimCity people can die. Your people can die because you aren't feeding them and checking in. I had Tracy Ashley on, and she had to set her watch so she could get back in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm glad ours isn't that.
That
Civ isn't that way. Yeah, that would. Because there's times when I will sit down at 9 o'clock at night, and I will play until sunup.
Wow. Just to get some stuff done? Just to build stuff? Where are you now?
I just finished a game. I'm going at higher and higher levels. I used to play at, the second one below the hardest level
okay.
on Civ 3. Civ 4 came out, and there was just way too many new variables.
Okay.
They introduced spies and different religions and a bunch of other shit that just made it way too complicated.
Right.
This new one, Civ 5, they went back and simplified it more.
Oh, okay.
But the tech tree, the tree of research,
okay.
is kind of infused with their culture stuff in a way that's really, really cool.
What's the politics on it?
you can politics are fantastic.
That's what I mean. That's what sounds fascinating. So you can be a despot. You can be a Republican. You can be
And you choose what government.
An anarchist. You can just choose anything.
You can choose whatever, but you have to have researched democracy.
Okay.
To have a democracy there, and you can. There are politics with the other civilizations.
Yeah.
If you're on good terms with them, they'll give you a favorable trade of, you know, maybe spices for your extra silk.
Is there an actual hierarchy? I mean, can you be a representative republic and then also like not be a democracy, just be a representative republic?
Yes.
Does it get that?
You can
fiddly?
Switch back to a previous thing. You can decide to go to. Autocracy, because you know you're going to go to war.
Okay.
And you need it. Yeah, you need higher factory production.
Right, and you're like, I need to fiddle more with your individual lives. I'm going to – because you're the hand of God, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
The other thing they have, which is really cool, is there are half a dozen civilizations you're playing against.
Okay.
You choose a map size. So for a small map, half a dozen civs you're playing against. Larger map size, you may be playing against eight or a dozen.
And it's all AI. It's all the computer program.
It's all AI.
Okay.
And now they have city states, which are cool. And
like the Vatican? What?
They like Rio de Janeiro.
Okay.
Some other ones. And they each have like a particular resource, be it strategic or luxury. And if you wind up, if you have enough extra gold, you can gift money to these city states and then you get in on their resources. But if you go to war with a civ who's allied with them, then you stop getting their resource. So there's all these politics involved, and you got to be nice to people. You got to pick the right ones to be nice to.
And you got to figure it out.
Yeah. And if you're getting a ton of luxury resources, your people are happy and they're more productive, then you can crank out more airplanes.
Right. What are the initial resources?
The first ones are iron.
Okay.
Stone. Horses.
Okay.
And each square of the map is, it might be desert, it might be grassland, it might be mountain. And you want one that's fertile because you want to grow your civ as fast as possible. But
you have to plant crops?
You have to play what?
Do you have to plant crops?
You have to build farms.
Okay.
So you have to produce a worker who's then going to go build roads and a farm and maybe a trading post.
Have you taken it to space age?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just won a science victory, which is you build I forget what the name of the spaceship is called. You can win militarily.
Hadrian's Wall. No, I have no idea.
You can win militarily. You can win scientifically. You can win culturally. And you can win diplomatically.
Okay.
Diplomatically, I won. You build the United Nations, and then you depend on a certain number of votes from other civs and city states to.
So when you win the game, does it end?
It ends, but you can also say, "Wait, let me play a couple more turns."
Okay.
Play indefinitely.
You can play indefinitely. Okay.
But eventually, the squares will stop producing food, and they'll turn to desert.
Oof.
Oil might run out.
Wow. Did you ever read A Canticle for Leibowitz?
I have not.
It is the cyclical nature of history. Anyway,
aluminum's a huge resource because you can't build planes. And as you know, control of the skies is huge.
That's what Billy Mitchell told us.
And it's kind of fun when you get uranium and somebody fucks with you and you nuke them. It's kind of cool.
What? And then is there a victory screen?
I believe there's a victory screen.
I'm a big fan of a victory screen.
Yeah.
Because then you know that it's over. And then you know that you can go back to your life.
And you can go back and look at your stats and see who had the highest population, who had the most happiness.
Okay.
You know, a bunch of other stuff.
That's hilarious.
Oh, Jackie, you got to try it.
I don't know.
And you can start on an easy level.
Yeah.
Which is great. And they have the help guide for it is fantastic.
Okay.
It's completely explains the theories and the strategies.
Well, that's great.
But it is it's just one of those games that you could play forever.
Yeah. Well, that's the terror of it. Is
it
that because now you just started playing again. You're playing Japan. And
the thing that's unique about their Civ that's so great is their soldiers fight. When you fight, you lose power as you get injured. And Japan's soldiers will fight as if they were full strength even when they're injured.
Well, that's a cultural thing.
It's fantastic when you're starting
out. That's a beautiful commitment to the whole. They're like, no, it'll be fine. And so where are you at now? Are you in Shogun time? What are we looking at?
Well, I just finished a game, so I won a cultural victory.
Okay.
So I'm going to start another game now at a higher level, and I have the feeling I'm going to be really depressed.
Oh, right, because it ramps everything up. It's harder to get things. It's harder to get started. It
takes longer to build. Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
I just won at the normal mode, and so I'm going to go to, I don't know, whatever the next one is.
That's hilarious.
But I think I might stick with Japan.
Yeah. It's. Can you do... Are there an infinite number of... Can you pick an obscure country? Like, you're like, I want to do the Ukraine.
Well, it's civilizations that,
right.
that you pick.
So you need there to be enough history to back it up. So you could pick China.
Yes.
You could pick... Can you pick into...
You can pick America.
Malaysia?
You can pick America. Malaysia is not a choice.
Okay, because it was... You know, Malaysian was the lingua franca of all of the archipelagos, the Southeast Asia.
Oh, really?
Asia. Yes, because... So, like,
you know, it's possible they're a Civ that I just haven't played against yet.
Yeah.
Because I've only played maybe five games on Civ 5, and I know there are new Civs that there weren't previously.
Well, I had on a previous episode, I had not the cellist, which was, I believe, how can I get Angela? Because it's Angela and Aubrey Weber. They are the Double Clicks, they are a duo, and they are a nerd comedy. One plays the guitar, one plays the cello. And
that's awesome.
Yes. And so I think it was Aubrey was the cellist and Angela was Minecraft. Have you ever tried Minecraft?
I have not.
Which is sort of like not a baby version of Civ, but you have to build your farm. You have to build your house. And if you have to build shelter immediately. Mm-hmm. And if you don't build shelter immediately, you die. Is it like that?
It is. It is.
Can you lose immediately if you don't get it together?
You can lose before it's – you start out at 5,000 BC or 4,000 BC.
Okay.
5,000 BC. And you can lose by 3,000 BC if you haven't built a single soldier, if you haven't built a warrior.
Oh.
They'll just come and they'll take over your capital. And if that's the only city you have,
right.
You've lost.
You're done. Yes.
Yeah.
And you are now a slave. So, but that's crazy. Now let's talk about, we're almost at an hour. So I like to, it's like, cause you're fascinating, Paul Gilmartin.
Oh,
you are
thank you, Jackie.
Fascinating, a multifaceted dork. You are, you're like a diamond and we can go to different sides.
I appreciate that. Cause I was afraid that I wasn't going to have enough street cred as a dork, but I feel like,
the definition of dork is wide and varied, of course. And woodworking, I just did an episode with surfers. And Murray said to me, you seem a little nervous. And I said, it's because I think you guys might be too cool to be dorks. Or I don't know. And I didn't know what it was. And then they just completely dorked out about surfing. So it was completely fine. So anything can be your dorkdom. It's just, it's a broad brush. Everyone's welcome. Everyone's welcome in the forest. Everybody's got a tree. So what do you like to read? Nonfiction from the look of it.
Yeah, nonfiction. And I love watching documentaries. I probably watch 6 documentaries a week, sometimes as many as 10.
They're never cheerful, though. Are there cheerful documentaries?
Darkness cheers me up.
Okay. Watching others suffer? What's happening?
That's the competitiveness in me. I'm like, my life's good. I win.
You do win.
Compared to Hitler, I'm a good guy.
You're a good guy. And Hitler, compared to Stalin, was a failure.
That's true. That's true. There are certain things that are too dark for me that I just – like one thing that I can't watch is children that are presently trapped in horrible situations.
So the arc has to end with them being freed or
it happened in the past.
Okay.
A reality show about kids whose moms put them in pageants is more depressing to me than the Holocaust, because it's like a kid standing on the train tracks.
Yeah.
To me, it's just
devastating.
It's devastating to me because I want to run in there and save them and say, your parent is abusive and crazy.
And breaking you.
And breaking you.
Yeah, please don't break your children.
But if something happened in the past, the darker the better. Love stuff about serial killers.
Oh, really?
Love stuff about countries that went through stuff that's difficult.
Right.
Civil wars, dictators.
Wow. I read a couple of months ago now, but I read a book about a boy soldier in Sierra Leone.
I think I read that one.
And that young man is he's out. He's out.
He came to the States and he got help.
Yeah.
Yes, that was a powerful book.
That was a great book. The saddest part of that book was talking about the kid that was standing next to him, who was a year too old for the UN to take him. And so that kid stuck eating Starbursts and watching Rambo and still killing people. So I have a hard time. I get depressed with documentaries. I love the Roosevelt documentaries because
that was a
story about triumph. Though I didn't like Ken Burns Jazz because I'm not a huge jazz fan.
I'm not either, but I loved it. You know, I will watch a documentary. I will read a book on
stuff
I hate. I read Nikki Sixx's autobiography. He's one of the guys from Motley Crue.
Okay.
Hate their music.
Not a fan of Motley Crue.
Love the book.
Love the book.
Because there's just drama in there about, you know, you're at the top, then you shoot heroin into your eyeball, and next thing you know, you're
eyeball heroin.
You're struggling to
Graham Acacian doesn't know a lot about eyeball heroin over here.
Maybe I don't know enough about heroin. I just assume that's where you shoot it.
That's where it goes. Yeah. That's good if you're trying to hide it. Because who's looking deeply into
track
your eyes?
Marks on your oculus? I don't know. Is that even a part of the eye? Sounds like it should.
It sounds like it ought to be. So what are your favorite biographies and autobiographies that you've read recently, or just any time?
I think my favorite one was the anthology, the Beatles.
The Beatles anthology.
I just thinking back to the mornings that I also got a seasonal affective disorder.
Okay.
Light. And so I was getting up in the morning. I was sitting in front of that for an hour, and I was reading the Beatles anthology, and is one of my fondest memories.
Oh, wow.
It was just like a warm blanket. And I love the Beatles. I'm a nut for the Beatles.
So it was interesting to see, and the anthology has just a bunch of minutia about their day to day.
Yes, and it was mostly written by them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I love stories by people about, I think I like autobiographies.
And there's
better
a documentary of anthology, which is fantastic.
And so you watched it together. With the book in hand, watching that documentary.
I think I watched the documentary after I read the book.
Okay. Well, that's fascinating. So you like musicians and their stories.
Love their, one of the best stories to me ever, is this Tony Iommi. You know who he is?
Nope.
The guitarist for Black Sabbath.
Nope.
He,
music is not my life, sadly. I like music, but I never know. So
he was his last day at work before he was going to quit to become a full-time musician.
Okay.
And he was, they said, can you cover for this person who's working in the sheet metal station.
Okay.
Which he was not used to doing. His attention waned for a minute.
No.
The thing came down and cut the tips of his fretting fingers off.
No.
And so he thought, my career is over. His foreman, a couple of days later, brings a record over, and puts it on, says, I want you to listen to this. And it was this amazing guitarist named Django Reinhardt. Have you ever heard of him?
Nope.
He was a Belgian gypsy who is really the godfather to me of swing jazz guitar.
Okay.
One of the greatest guitarists ever.
Okay.
Put this on. Tony Iommi was like, that's great. What's your point? He said, this guy has two fingers.
Wow.
And Tony Iommi said, I can play guitar. I will find a way
to
get back. And he fashioned plastic tips that he wears to this day on his...
Oh, just little extender kind of things?
Yeah, so that the skin doesn't break, because it's just bone. There's no padding on his tips. So
thimbles.
And there's no nerves. So he has to play. He can't play by feel. He has to play by sound. But that was before even the first Black Sabbath album was recorded. And here's the really cool part.
Yeah.
He couldn't handle the tight string tension of regular tuning.
Yeah.
So he tuned it down, which made a heavier sound, which gave birth to the sound of heavy metal.
Oh.
It was in.
I kind of got chills right there. That's a great story. Paul Gilmartin, you've done vital work here. This has been a great dork for us.
I could talk to you all day, and I can't wait to have you on my podcast.
Fair enough. I'll come and be. I'll talk about my mental pod. I'll talk about my mentals. I got mentals. I know. I seem super together, you guys. I'm all right. Anyway, Rangers, you're doing. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Take care of each other out there. You know the rules. Bye.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Thank you. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?